The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
It's Matt Slick Live. Matt is the founder and president of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, found online at carm.org. When you have questions about Bible doctrines, turn to Matt Slick Live for answers. Taking your calls and responding to your questions at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome to the show. It's me, Matt Slick, and you're listening to Matt Slick Live. Now, just to let you guys know, on today's date, 424, year 24. So, hey, 424-24, how about that? Rumble is having a problem. So normally we simulcast the show onto Facebook, onto, on YouTube and on Rumble. And I don't know if we do Twitter or not. Maybe they can type it in, tell me in private chat there where it all goes out to. But anyway, we also do it to Rumble, but Rumble's having problems. So if you can't find me on Rumble, that's why. It's not our fault. I tried twice, and they have a notice up. Something's wrong with it or having problems with their uploads and stuff like that. So that's what it is for today. All right. Matchlick-live. We're going there. Oh, you're not doing the other one. How about, isn't it going to Facebook, too? Is it Facebook, live on YouTube, yeah, Facebook. And do we do X? We're supposed to do X and Facebook. And Facebook, carm.org, and Laura's typing it in as fast as she can. And no X, so X doesn't mark the spot? That's pretty bad. All right, hey, look, if you want to give me a call, all you have to do is dial 877-207-2276. And only posts in X. Okay, that's interesting. I thought X did video. I don't know. Anyway, you got to, you know, I've been thinking about something today. Let me get the phone number out again, but 877-207-2276. All right. So, if any of you out there know stuff about what I'm going to talk about, it has to do with search engines and things like that, you know, pay attention. See if you have any good advice. So years ago, when I started CARM 28 years ago, CARM was basically the only thing on the internet that did it what it did. And when you type in an article or type in a question, CARM was number one in almost everything. It was just constant like that for years and years and years. And we were doing great. And then we're in 2016, we're having 97,000 page views a day. 97,000 visitors a day. You know, that means a lot. It was a lot of traffic. And then we had a server problem, and our site crashed. It was down for 2 days, and then we got it running again. And it wasn't quite fixed right because it was a big, complicated thing. And we noticed that the traffic around that time started going down and down. All right. So this went on. And we've since got it fixed. Everything's been fixed. And now we are stuck around 30,000 page views a day, 30 to 33,000 a day. Or is it page views or is it, how many page views? I think it's page views. A page view means someone comes into the site and looks at a page. And so we are having about 18,000 visitors a day. And about 15,000 are coming back on a regular basis daily, so 18,000 a day. Okay, well, anyway, I've been thinking about this, and you know, I'm in the middle of a bunch of projects, so I really can't focus on it too much, but the site does not come up on first or second pages hardly anymore on research. You know, you type in a query, like I'm going to do it right now, let's see. You know, what is the Trinity? And see if it even shows up. It used to be that when you typed in just what is the Trinity, it was always number one. It was the number one article was from CARM. And now there's just a lot of other sites before, and I'm looking, I'm scanning, and CARM doesn't even show up in the first page so far, nothing. And, you know, anyway, so I'm not whining and complaining. It's just that if anybody knows what to do to help fix this kind of stuff, and I'm still looking on this, and it's still not on the first page, and there's quite a few on the first page. Wow. It used to be always be number one. And Interesting. So I'm just scrolling down like 30 references here, and it's just not even showing up. So I'll give up looking. So anyway, I just don't know what to do. And the site has got 6,000 articles, well, 6,000, 7,000, I don't even know how many. How many does it have, Laura? Do you know? So we have thousands and thousands of articles. We're one of the oldest websites out there doing what we're doing. And I think the market's pretty much saturated. And so, yeah, there's over 6,000. I know I've written about 6,000. I think there's like 7,000 articles or something like that. I don't know. Maybe Laura can tell me. She knows it. But I'm just trying to figure out how to get more stuff going better, more better. And maybe if someone out there goes, yeah, I know what to do, you know, give me a call, give me a an email or reference or something like that, because we want to get as much stuff as we're going. And what we're going to be doing is working on some video stuff. We're working on something not quite released yet where we should be able to get a lot more video stuff going. And I'm thinking about just sitting here in my chair and taking a video topic and just talking about it. And just doing impromptu discussions and things, and just release them as videos, and do that a lot. Because it's like doing it on radio, you know, I do the same kind of thing on radio. Anyway, just a thought, not whining, not complaining. I think there's a lot of competition out there now. Before, there wasn't any really competition, and I was always number one. And even when the competition was starting, you know, like 15 years ago, 15, maybe 20 years ago, Karm was still up there. And so now, here we are. So I am thinking. So, yeah, and it, just to let people know, the Rumble server is having problems on their end, and they're not able to get uploads or do something, so that's why we're not doing that. So we're not broadcasting to them today, but hopefully, Lord willing, tomorrow. All right, if you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. Jesse from Arizona, welcome. You are on the air.
Hey, Matt, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think I've talked to you a few times over the years, and you've helped me a lot.
No.
And I don't have a question, but I just wanted to share some insight. I don't know if you're aware of it, but right. I'm a former Jehovah's Witness elder.
Whoa.
I was for 40 years, and I was an elder for 13 years.
Okay.
But I always believed in the divinity of Christ, and my name is Jesus, and my mom, since I was a baby, instilled the love of Jesus in me. And so it's like persecution. When you're a Jehovah's Witness and you believe in the divinity of Christ, you're going to suffer a lot. It's like being behind enemy lines. But anyways, are you aware of everything going in the religion right now, of the Jehovah's Witnesses?
No, I'm not. I've really been out of contact with what's going on. It just hasn't been a necessity. What's going on? Tell me.
They're self-destructing. You know, they're real proud that they don't have a creed. They don't have a constitution. They claim that Jehovah's their constitution, Jehovah's their creed. So they don't need anything. And right now, you see, like, for instance, let me just shoot some little things at you. The men can wear beards now. Since Russell Rutherford's day, yeah, they can wear beards. So they're walking around with a little testosterone in their town. You know, they're all metrosexual men.
That's big.
And women can wear pants now in the ministry.
Really? Those are big.
And they're relaxed.
Those are big things.
And,
wow.
Yeah, and so you're going to see them out in the door-to-door ministry and in the street corners with women with pants. And then I think some of the blood transfusion, some of it is being made into a conscientious decision over the faction issues. I mean, it's just, but what happened is they're, 2 days ago was nice on the 14th. So for the last 100 years, we always gathered to do the Last Supper or the Lord's evening meal on the Jewish Passover.
Right.
But this year they did it real close to the Christian Easter. So they're not the same Jehovah's Witness church they were for the last 100 years. I mean, they're changing radically and fast. But one question.
Well, let me ask you that. Yeah. They still only have communion for the 144,000, right?
See, that's the thing. They're not talking about the 114,000. They're not, 144,000. They're not talking about the 1914 because their religion had a date stamp on it. They preached 1975 and 1914. Now all the 1914 people are dead. So they're not bringing that issue up as much. It's not prominent like it used to be. And so I guess my question is this. Wow. Since they didn't believe Jesus is the rock, they didn't hold Jesus to be a foundation, the God.
Okay.
God incarnate. The Word becomes flesh. Since they didn't put emphasis on that, they put in Jehovah and the Watchtower.
Right.
I tell everybody that in my circle, what we're going to see is we're going to see like 10 plagues come upon the Jehovah's Witnesses with the beards, the blood transfusion, the child sexual abuse.
Well, wait. Now you got me curious. I know there's a lot of abuse that's gone on. There's lawsuits and things like that. Some predators in there. But you mean 10 plagues because the Jehovah's Witnesses are what? I don't get that.
Because they didn't have Jesus as a foundation. They're a rudderless boat in the ocean. Since they didn't have Jesus as a foundation, I think that they have destined themselves, they have cursed themselves to the plagues of Babylon. You know, get out of her, my people. Let me give you an example.
What you mean is not literally the same 10 plagues, but that it's going to fall apart, it's going to implode. Okay, now I got you.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Symbolically, they're imploding. Let me give you an idea. During the pandemic, they were the first organization to close the churches. They didn't give the publishers a chance to even... They lived like if it was a Babylon. The governing body leadership... he even went on the public air. He goes, cheer up. It's only going to get worse. They really believe that the pandemic was the start of the Great Tribulation.
No way.
So,
they did?
Yeah. You can find it on YouTube. Go to Anthony Morris. He goes, cheer up. It's only going to get worse. And what happened now he's been removed from the governing body. That's another plague that I'm talking about. They're self-destructing. And, But my question to you, if I had to have one question, could it be because they turned their back on Jesus and embraced the concept of Jehovah and demoted Jesus to like third in charge, like lower than the Secretary of State, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Could that be why they're wandering aimlessly now?
Well, they're wandering aimlessly, or if they are, is because there's a non-Christian cult that's denied the true God, the true Christ, the true gospel. They've always been wandering. It's just a mind-control cult. That's what it's been.
Correct.
So
correct, but now it's visible to even the untrained eye.
Well,
now the effects of the wandering aimlessly. People are starting to see. Whoa, the wearing of the pants. Wait, you were fanatic about beards. You were fanatic about the blood issue. You guys even went to the death over it. Yeah.
Yeah, they excommunicated people over it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, this means then that if what you're saying is true, I'm sure there's more going on. And that would mean that a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses are going to be severely challenged. And maybe the Christians could be there to help pick up the pieces. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know how, because the fanaticism is even worse. They're kind of like in denial, like Baghdad Bob. Remember during the Gulf War? The forces are not near us. They really believe, like, for instance, they really believe this is a sign of the times. So anything that comes out negative about them, it reinforces their belief that the world is against them, even though the world doesn't even know they're here.
Yeah. Well, you know? People know that who the Jehovah's Witnesses are, but it's interesting what you're saying. You know, I've not had to study them much at all lately because I just haven't. But it'll be interesting to kind of check things out. Hey, there's a break, man. We got to get going.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. But hey, man, thanks a lot, Jesse. I really appreciate that. Okay, we got a break. Do you want to hold or you want to?
No, I just want to tell you, it wouldn't be funny if our brothers weren't suffering. That's all.
Okay. All right, buddy. God bless, man. Hey, folks, there's a break. We'll be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned.
It's Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. If you want to give me a call, all you have to do is dial 877-207-2276. Marty from North Carolina, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Matt, thanks for coming to work today.
I'm always at work, except Sundays, and then I only work 10% of my time. Yeah.
I know. I got a lot of questions, so you can cut me off at any time. I usually listen to you while I'm driving, so today I'm parked safely. I have a pen in hand. So my first question is something I've heard you mention on the phone, on the radio show, about which version of the Bible that you recommend or that you use?
Yeah, I use the NASB 95. That's what I use now.
NASB.
But there's another Bible I've heard about, and I've checked, and I'm going to look into it. And it's based off the NASB, but they include the word Yahweh in the Old Testament at different places. So I like that. But what I normally use is the NASB 95 version. It's just my habit. It's pretty good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I've read a couple versions, and I'm 70, and I'm reading through the Bible again. And I love that, but and I'm now in Samuel, and I love the story between about King David. But before I get to that, I wanted to ask you, is there something that I could get when I'm in the chapters of the Bible, the books of the Bible that I know I'm going to have a problem with? And those problems, I'm going to have a problem in Jeremiah. I'm going to have a problem in Isaiah, and I'm going to have a problem in Daniel. Is there any aid that you can give me that will help me better understand those books of the Bible?
Sure. What you could do is, for example, you can just get a single volume commentary. And there are a lot of good ones. So you can go to a Bible bookstore, or you can even go online. And just what I would do first is recommend, just do recommended single volume Bible commentaries. So it's usually thick, 800 pages or something like that. And it'll go through every chapter of the Bible in order as you're reading them, and you can get the basics of what's going on. And so I have a couple of those that I've used over the years. And let me go to here. Let's see. Some of the ones that I have on my Bible program now are, let's see, one of the ones that I'm using here, this one is the, oh, that's the Word Pictures in New Testament. I don't need that. I want to go here because I have several, and I just use them. The Bible, yeah, that's what I was thinking. The Bible Knowledge Commentary, that's pretty decent. The Bible Knowledge Commentary, and you can check that out. Okay. And let's see, there's another one that, the Bible Reader's Companion. That's just, it's good. They're just general things. I read through them. I don't agree with everything that the commentators say, but that's okay. And so I recommend it's called a single volume commentary. And you can get something like that. Okay.
All right. That's helpful. Now,
the
you can cut me off at any time, but I'm reading.
Yeah. The New Bible Commentary is also good. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
The New Bible Commentary. So the three you've given me, the Bible Knowledge Commentary, the Bible Reader's Commentary, and the New Bible.
Yeah, just get one of those. And then if you really want to study, you can just find commentaries on single books, and they can be quite big, and they go into far more detail. You can also go online, for example, at blueletterbible.com. And you can get commentaries and stuff there for free. So, go to for example, John 3:16. And I'm going to do this in the NASB 95. I hit go. And then over there on John 3:16, it has tools. And then you'll see tabs coming up, and it'll say commentaries. And then you can read commentaries and stuff like that. And they have all kinds. Okay.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. You're helping me. Now, you can cut me off, but I want to talk about what I'm reading in Samuel. And, of course, this is about when King David is, when Samuel picks David to be the next king.
Right.
And one of the things I notice is, first of all, they talk in 1 Samuel 16 in the version that I'm reading, is that David is not, he's a ruddy kid. He's not very comely. And then later on, Samuel dresses him, I think it's in 1 Samuel 18, he dresses him up for battle, and then afterwards he asks whose son he is. Well, he knows whose son he is. Does the guy have dementia? What's up with him?
It might be that he didn't know it was David, because David was a musician, and it says beautiful eyes, handsome appearance in 1 Samuel 16:12. So I have to read it in context, but when David went out, it's like, who is this guy? And they were going to put him in armor, and he said no, and he walks out. It doesn't mean that, because Saul was probably getting older, and his vision, was probably not as good, and maybe didn't know who it was and wasn't expecting David. But I don't know for sure. I have to check that out.
I know. And then the other thing that confuses me some is that it says an evil spirit came on Saul from God.
Mm-hmm.
And that confused me. It said it several times, and I mm-hmm. thought God does not tempt. I've been taught that God does yeah. not tempt.
All right. And now I'm going to have to teach you a little bit of logic, all right? So God does not tempt. Okay, that's correct. He does not do it by his own hand. He does not tempt anybody. Okay, now I'm going to step sideways here and teach a concept, and then we'll come back to this. So in the Garden of Adam and Eve, Adam freely chose to rebel against God and eat the fruit. No one forced him to do it. He did it of his own. He is what's called then the efficient cause of his own sin. He caused it himself, not God. The proximate cause, we have efficient cause, is the agent who actually does it. The proximate cause is the condition in which the agent acts. The proximate cause was that God put the garden there, the trees there, Adam and Eve there, and let the devil come in. So God let him come in and let the situation be. God ordained that situation to be. And so God is what we call the proximate cause of the sin of Adam or the fall of Adam. But when we say proximate, we're not saying that God is the efficient cause in that God directly by his own hand caused it. No, God allowed circumstances to come into play where Adam, with his own freedom, no one forced him, chose to rebel, so he's the efficient cause. So the efficient cause is the one who's responsible for his sin. The proximate cause is not responsible for his sin. So think of those two things. So it came about when evil spirit from God came to Saul. It's like saying that the Lord let an evil spirit go to Saul and do what the evil spirit would do. But God's not the efficient cause. He's the proximate cause. So he's not culpable, and he's not the one who did the tempting, but he allowed a spirit to go to tempt. Just like God allowed Satan to come into the garden to deceive Eve. God allowed that, knowing exactly what was going to happen. So he's not the efficient cause. He's the proximate cause. And the distinction between efficient and proximate causation is also the distinction between culpability. Okay? Oh, there's a break. Hold on.
Okay.
Hope that helps. But we got a break. So hold on. We'll get back to you after the break, okay? Because you can formulate your question there. Hey, folks, be right back after these messages. If you want to give me a call, all you got to do is dial 877-207-2276. We'll be right back.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Let's get back on with Marty from North Carolina. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, right. This is a quick question. I believe after reading the Old Testament again several times in my life, I'm going to see Lot someday in heaven because the Bible said we're going to see that righteous man, bring him out of Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm not sure about Saul. Am I going to see Saul in heaven? What do we think?
I don't know. An evil spirit came from Saul. He started attacking David and turned against him, but David didn't turn against him. So it's a tough one. And he, he sought, the occultic stuff in Samuel, and so I can't tell you he will or will not. If I can find a verse in there where God says, you are my son, or you are mine, and I will love you and will not forsake you, well, then we could say he'd be in heaven. But I just don't know. I haven't read that for a while to see. But a good question, though.
Mm-hmm. It is a good question. I'll leave you with this one. A lot of times people tell me that that want to say that gay marriage is okay, that the relationship between Jonathan and David was... I don't believe that because it says over and over again that David behaved himself wisely. So are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, there was no homosexuality there. It's something that the homosexual community, the alphabet mob, seeks to use the Bible, the holiness of God, to justify their sin. And when it talks about them, you know, holy kisses and things like that, leaning on each other, this is not homosexuality, because that was absolutely against the teachings of God. And so they were godly people. And David would not have done that. David's desire was to dwell in the house of the Lord. So when the alphabet mob says something like this, it's just their ignorance and their twisting of Scripture, and they want to use God to justify their sin. And so the judgment on them is even worse.
Oh, last question, I promise. Do you know Joseph Prince, the pastor?
I know who he is, yes. I'd stay away from him.
Do you have an opinion on him?
Yeah, stay away. Okay. And, I mean, you need to do more direct stuff in quotes. You know, I've only got 8,000 things to do. I'm literally working on an article while we're talking. That's how much I work. So,
wow.
I mean, during the break, yeah, I was researching. I'm doing an article on what are the main topics of the letters of the seven churches of Revelation. So I just did, well, during the break, I did Thyatira. And so next I have to do Sardis. So, yeah, there's just a lot to do. But at any rate, now what were we talking about? I just lost my train of thought.
I was asking about Joseph Prince.
Oh, yeah, Joseph Prince. So thanks. So I have a list of people I'm supposed to analyze as well, and just haven't gotten to it. I have close, about 830 or 840 questions I'm supposed to get to. And I just deleted over the past few days, I just deleted about 3,000 emails because I just can't get to them. I just said, that's it, we're done.
No.
Just not even. I have, I'm going to whine a little bit. I have voicemails I have to get to, which I haven't gotten to in a few days. I'm going to do that. So there's just a lot. It's a lot.
I know. I appreciate you coming to work. I'm actually going to go to CARM. I'm going to sign up for a little monthly thing for you because I listen to you every day on the way home. And God bless you and yours.
Well, thank you very much. And God bless you. Thanks. Appreciate it. Keep listening. Okay. All right. Let's get to, if you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. Let's get to Tracy from Charlotte, North Carolina. Tracy, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So, what do you got, man?
I have a question. In 2 Samuel, talks about Saul's son, Jonathan, had a son named Mephibosheth.
Yeah.
If I'm saying that correctly.
Okay.
You know, and it mentions him several times and everything, and what David did for him. But the next, you know, the next book in Chronicles, where it's listing all the descendants and everything like that, when it gets to that line, you know, Saul's line, it does, you know, and it doesn't mention anything about him. Is that, well, I was just kind of curious if you know anything about that, maybe.
Well, he was crippled when he was younger. So I don't know why, so I don't know why they didn't mention him. Maybe because of his condition, he was not able to participate in stuff. And so therefore he was excluded from the events that go on. But I think your question is a good question. What you could do is you could email it to us. Say, hey, what about this? And see if we can get to it and research it, you know, and try and get some answers. Because sometimes it just says he'll die, or sometimes it says it won't say anything. They just don't, and then we have to kind of guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's Mephibosheth. Right.
However you say it, Mephibosheth.
Mephibosheth. Yes. There's another name in there I love in the Bible, Mahelahela Shazbaz, which I think is a really cool name. Just. Off
well,
the top of your head.
In the line, you know, in the Chronicles where it lists the line, there is it does list a name as a son of Jonathan, and it's I mean, I thought maybe there was just an interpretation or something like that. I mean, it does list a descendant, but nowhere near the same spelling. So it's just
one
of those curious things.
Yeah, it could be different spellings. That could actually happen. But it's in 2 Samuel 4, 2 Samuel 9, I believe he's mentioned. So other than that, I'm not sure what to tell you. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time.
All right, buddy. Well, God bless. All right. Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Hey, we have nobody waiting. If you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. All right. Let's see. And if you want, you can email me, too. Real easy to do. All you have to do is send an email to info@carm.org. info@carm.org. And then I can, like right now, I'm just looking at it. You put in a radio question or radio comment, and I get to them. In fact, as I'm looking in our, okay, let's see. Okay, don't see any more. Wait, there's something for radio right there. What was that? Radio question comment. Good, there's another one. All right, yeah, we got a few. I can get to some of those if we don't have any more callers. Oh, one's coming in. But let's see, we've got a radio call. Let's see, Tony says, in our fallen state pre-salvation, is there a spark of divinity in us? No. Since we're created in his image. No, we are not divine in any way, shape, or form. What we have is what's called the communicable attributes of God. The communicable attributes of God are those attributes that he has that we can also participate in. So he thinks, we can think. He loves, we can love, etc. So the communicable attributes, it doesn't mean we're divine, because divinity is a quality that belongs to God alone. It does not belong to anybody else. It is his quality, his nature, his essence. So when people say, you know, you're divine in your basic heart, man, give me a break. That's a load of crud. Because divinity, by definition, is eternal. It is pure, and that's just not us. So when people say we have divinity in us, that's just a self-exaltation. And it's sin as well, okay? Hey, let's get to Ray from Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Hanging in there, a little melancholy, a touch of obstreperousness, but other than that, I'm okay.
That's good. I had a question for you. I've started reading some systematic theologies. I read through most of Calvin's Institutes. I thought it was phenomenal.
Wow.
And then I started reading Louis Berkhof's systematic theology. And I wanted to know if there were any other ones that you recommend that maybe you've read through.
You've probably read more Calvin Institutes than I have. Seminary is required to read some of it. Berkhof, his systematic theology is very good. Hodge is also very good. And also Grudem is very good. So those are the three systematics that I'll go to for serious research. When I want to have some, you know, just get the deep theology from the super experts. So,
gotcha.
That's what I'll do. I don't even look at Calvin. I'm a Calvinist, but I don't even look at Calvin's Institutes. I know. And a lot of people don't know this, though. Here's some trivia. The Institutes of the Christian Religion, which he wrote when he's like 26 or 27 years old, is considered one of the absolutely most influential books outside the Bible of Western civilization. How about that? Because... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I was just sorry to cut you off. Yeah, it was a phenomenal read. I read book 1, 2, and 3. I stopped at book 4. I started to look at some other things, but I've been reading some Puritans and some other guys because of that. He was unbelievable. It really, really opened up the door for me for a lot of different other things to read. But
hold on, man.
The other ones.
Hold on. We got a break, okay? So hold on, and we can talk more about that kind of stuff. Hold on, okay? Hey, folks, be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Let's get back on with Ray from Charlotte, North Carolina. Ray, man, you're back on the air.
Okay, very good. I wanted to ask you this question also, just along those same lines. What commentaries do you recommend? What are your favorite commentaries?
Depends on what I'm doing. If I want a generic 20,000-foot view, I do a single-volume commentary. I have three that I generally go to. New Bible Commentaries, one of them that I have in my Logos Bible program, and I have some others. I just go to them. If I want more Greek analysis of something and how Greek relates to what's going on doctrinally, then I'll get the Lutheran commentaries from Lenski, and I'll do that.
Lenski, okay.
Lenski, and he, and you know, but he'll, not everything, everything he says is not perfect, of course. I mean, like, just with me, of course.
Right.
But the guy really knows his Greek, and he might say something like, the aorist passive indicative here means this. This is why this relates to that. And I love that kind of stuff. So I'll study him as well. And then I have a host of commentaries, because I'm on Logos. And over the years, I've accumulated a lot of stuff. And so, like, what I'll do, I'll be in a commentary, and I just hit my right arrow, and it just takes me to the next commentary. Whatever that one is, and the next one, the
okay.
next one, and the next one. So I have a lot of commentaries at my literally at my fingertips, and I can search them. So it's just incredible.
Okay.
So I don't read on books, paper books anymore. I do.
Okay.
And I have one of those folding phones, as a matter of fact, you know, those Fold 5, and
yeah.
I read on Kindle on there. So I do everything electronically now because it's just so much faster. But anyway,
very cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I guess one last question.
Sure.
I have I went and purchased the McClinic and Strong's biblical encyclopedias, and
okay.
I wanted to know if you ever referenced those or looked into those.
The Strong's I've used many times. The other ones I'm just not familiar with. But there's new stuff that comes out all the time. But one of the things you can do that I think is really helpful that commentaries don't do. And commentaries don't teach, and Bible places don't teach to do, and it's word studies. Actually, there are some books that are called the Word Studies of, and you can do that. There are books that have done that, excuse me. But what I'll do, for example, is the last one I started a few days ago, and I'm so busy. I put in the phrase, the law, you know, quote, mm-hmm. the law, quote, and I'll find every reference where it occurs in the Bible. And then I want to see,
okay.
for example, how is God using it and what is meant by it in the variety of things, because I need to deal with some heretical teachings from some of the people from Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholicism. And they divide law up into this and that, so they can, it's complicated. So I'll do studies like that. And I've discovered over the years that doing word studies is very enlightening. Very enlightening, and it will definitely affect your theological perspective. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. My dad told me that he loves word studies, and he says mm-hmm. that's the number one thing that has really affected his theology. And you know, we mm-hmm. don't know any Greek, so we just look it up in the Strong's Concordance and make some connections there. I'm sure it's more the more that you know. So I appreciate you taking my call.
Wow.
God bless.
Hey man, God bless, and tell your dad way to go for word studies. I'm with him. They're like one of the most important things I've ever developed or learned to do that affect my theology. It's just tremendous. It's good stuff.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, man. Well, God bless, buddy.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. We'll see ya. All right. Now, let's get over to Taylor from Ohio. Taylor, welcome. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Uh-huh.
Cool. I just listened to you for the first time.
Okay.
I'm working out of town. Your station came on. I've been listening to it. But I was just curious. Now, like, the letter J actually wasn't in the alphabet till like, way after Jesus was born.
That's
like,
correct.
The Hebrew or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Is the correct name Yahusha?
Well, in Matthew 1:21, it says, "She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." The Greek word Jesus is literally, and I'm looking at it in Greek, Iesus. So it's E-A. But literally, in Greek, it's an I with a long A. It's called an iota eta. So you say E-A, E-A. Okay, E-A, and then sus, Iesus. That's how it's really kind of pronounced. There's slightly different variations on pronunciation like that, but that's basically how his name is pronounced in the Greek. Okay.
Okay. And then what about his father? Is it Yahweh or Yahuwah?
There's another one. So the Tetragrammaton occurs 6,517 times in the Old Testament, and that's the name of God. I am. So what we have a problem because we don't know what vowels to put in, because when the Jews would write in the Hebrew, they would do the consonants, not the vowels. They added vowel points hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later. So what we have in the name of God, Yahweh, we'll just call that for now, is the tetragrammaton, the tetra for the four letters, Yod He Vav He. All right, so how do you pronounce it? No one really knows. So is it Yoho, Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahi? You know, so depending what vowels you put in there, but generically speaking, the most accepted form that I've seen is simply Yahweh. So, and that's good. Okay. It's good enough. We don't have to know the exact pronunciation. It's not like that. And it's okay to have different names. You know, my name in Spanish is Mateo. Well, in English it's Matthew. Right. All right, so, well, I guess that's not my real name when you say Mateo. If I'm, you know, when I'm talking to someone in Spanish, you know, and they say, you know, ¿Cómo estás, Mateo? I say, hey, yeah, estoy bien, gracias. You know, I say, I'm fine, because they're using my Spanish. And that's fine. No big deal.
I just feel personally, and, you know, I obviously don't know as much as you, but I feel like, you know, it's like other religions, you know, they, you know, worship their God. You know, it's like God... Mm-hmm. Calling our, you know, who we believe in, I feel like calling him God is almost like a generic name. You know what I mean? It's like that covers so many other religions. So to just strictly call him God, you know, it's like I feel like there is a more specific name that he deserves to be called in a way.
But they call him God, yes, but they call him God in the Old Testament hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. So it's okay to just say God, because if you're really a Christian, that's the one you're praying to, is the true and living God. His name is Elohim, because Jehovah is Elohim, 1 Kings 8:60. So, you know, Jehovah is, or Yahweh is Elohim. That's what, you know, is God. So that's what it's saying. So it's okay to say God. You know, when I'm praying, I say, you know, Lord God, or Jesus, or, you know, whatever. It's okay.
One more quick question, if you get the time.
Sure, go ahead.
What's your thoughts on a flat Earth? Because
it's ridiculous.
You know, there's several Bible verses stating you know, how he casts out the heavens and the New Jerusalem. When that comes down, isn't that like 1,500 miles? 1,600, and the only way something square like that would fit would be on a flat Earth. There'd be
no, it's
too
not
much
true.
Curvature to...
That's assuming 1,600 miles is literal. It's symbolic in the Book of Revelation. There's a very easy way to prove that flat Earth idea is wrong. It's very simple, and I've talked to flat Earthers about this. It's very, very easy, and it's the moon. So let me give you an illustration of something. If you have a circle, a flat surface, 3 feet in diameter, and let's just say you put a dome over it, and the dome is roughly 2 feet from the, you know, the height in the middle. All right. So now what you're going to do is you're going to put a ball up there, and that ball represents the moon, and it's in the upper center. That means people from the left side and the right side are going to see different sides of the moon. That's necessary. That's how it works. There's no way around this. But that's not what you see when you look up in the sky. You see the same face of the moon from every side of the Earth. The reason you do that is because it's 250,000 miles away. It's it's humongously different. And if you do vectors, if you take that that model I just gave you, and you put numbers around the equator of this little ball in the middle, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And, you know, so people on one side will see 1, 2, 3, 4. The other ones will see 6, 7, 8, 9, for example. They're not going to see the other side. How can you then see all the numbers? If you raise that thing up, you know, 100 feet, maybe then you could see it, the whole side, because of the angle. Well, that's how the moon is. It just refutes the idea of a flat Earth and a canopy over it, a little dome thing. It's just ludicrous. The flat Earth thing is ludicrous.
I believe in it personally.
Well, you shouldn't.
And,
because the Bible does not state that it's the earth is flat. It uses metaphor. See, what I do with flat earthers, I'll say, well, do you believe the earth is has four corners? If they say yes, I say, well, then why does the Bible say the circle of the earth? If they say the Bible teaches the earth is circular, I say, well, then why don't you believe the four corners? Because it speaks of both of them. It's metaphor. That's all that's going on.
So what about the found? There's also a verse about the foundations shall never be moved, and you know, and how would that work on a globe? You know, theory.
It's just metaphor.
It's flying through metaphor. Space.
It's metaphor. Look, think about this. The earth is on a foundation. Let's take the flat earth model. It's on a foundation. Good. What foundation? Is it pillars? Is it really pillars holding up a flat disk? And what are the pillars being sustained on? Are they floating in space? What are the pillars on? And what's that on? And what's that on? And what's that on? And how far do you go? Because it makes no logical sense to say there's literal pillars. Because what are they resting on? And where does gravity come from? Because in
there's
the model of
gravity.
That's what they say. There's no such thing as gravity. Well, in order, which is dumb, because in order to say there's no such thing as gravity, or to say that there has to be a means by which gravity can be, so to speak, faked, you have to have an acceleration, so that we have, you know,
buoyancy.
What's that?
Buoyancy and density.
No. That doesn't work. That's look. I've taken physics. Buoyancy and density have no bearing on gravity. It's ridiculous. Okay, people who talk like that, I'm sorry, but it just irritates me because they just don't know what they're talking about. They don't. It doesn't work like that.
I respect what you have to say, but I dug. My buddy told me he thought the world was flat, and I told him he was an idiot, and he's like, look into it. And I was like, all right, and I looked into it, and I'm like, man, you know, this makes more sense. It's like, I believe. You know, the sun and the moon is God created it as like a clock. And
okay, we're almost out of time.
I don't believe in space. But, okay, but NASA look, in Hebrew.
Hold on. We're almost out of time here. I just want to tell you, I've looked into it too, and the more I look into it, the more the flat Earth position is falsified. Okay, and you can come back tomorrow. We can talk more about it. Then there's a parallax effect. There's all kinds of things, but the moon thing proves the little dome theory is false. It proves it, okay? And when I talk about it with people, they just ignore it because it doesn't fit their model and they can't do anything with it. So, hey, man, call back tomorrow and we can talk about it more slowly, okay?
What's the name of your show?
Matt Slick Live.
I didn't catch it.
Matt Slick Live.
What is it?
Matt Slick Live. It's my real name. Okay, buddy, we've got to go. We're out of here. Hey, folks, God bless everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.